Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show. My name is Josh, and I'm a Orlando entrepreneur. And I travel around having conversation with those who are entrepreneurs and those who support and build the communities around them. So I'm really excited to have a conversation with a woman who's been very involved in the entrepreneurial community here. And she's a specialist at connecting communities. So ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to a very interesting person. She has an incredible background. I can't wait to go into it. But Wendy Lynn Phillips, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Wendy to the show. Wendy, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Thank you, Josh. I'm excited to be here with you, meet you cyberly. And I know it's going to be a great conversation. Love serving the Orlando community.
Yeah. Now I'm looking through your profile and like there's so many cool things that you've been a part of. NABO, now you're a founder and president of a software company, Community Events App, and you've had your own business for a long time and you've built sales groups and you're a trainer, a coach, a teacher. Like you are a dynamic person. So why don't we get started with, you know, like who are you? What are you doing? And we could kind of unfold your story from there.
Well, great. Thank you, David. You know what? It is interesting to look at people's journey, right? I mean, the where we are today is, I always find that really interesting. How did you get there, right? And how did this road lead you down that road? And that person connected you to that person and this potential tragedy in your life thwarted that route, and so you went this route. And anyway, I guess if truth be told, it started back when I was born. Some people are serial entrepreneurs or born leaders, whatever you want to call it. And so at the age of 10, with my dad in the military, and we lived in Holland, Europe, the Netherlands. So I never lived on a army base. I always lived in the community. And I think that, you know, I really reflected now, you know, much later in life, 40 years later here, I'm looking back at a 10-year-old little blonde, blue-eyed girl in Holland in the community, quickly learning the Dutch language because I had to, you know, those were my friends. And there was this little strawberry patch. And I would go pick these strawberries. And, you know, I was like, Daddy, do you think I could put them in the red wagon and go knock around on the doors and maybe sell them to those people? And my dad was like, looking at me, I'm sure shaking his head going, yes, child, just, you know, go, whatever. And so I would load up my one-year-old sister, put her in this red wagon. Of course, I didn't know it was called smart marketing, but I used her as my marketing tool, you know, because everybody fawns all over babies. So I thought she'd be cute. Let's sit her in the red wagon, get my little strawberries that I paid 50 cents for, and I went and sold them for a dollar. Well, you know, that's called pretty good margin. So again, my dad and I didn't necessarily have those kind of conversations about it, but I'm sure he looked at me and smiled and nodded and thought, you know, this girl's going to be all right. I think she can figure out how to make money. And as quickly as I sold them, I begged to go back and pick more strawberries and let me do it again every day. And after that, I mean, it went into macrame and leather belts, and they had this little art place on the army base. And I would make everything I could and not go around and knock on doors and sell it. I, you know, and at 12 years old, I would be mowing lawns for $5. I'll never forget. It was a $5 bill, an American $5 bill, not the Dutch money. And to me, that was, you know, really exciting. So anyway, I mean, that's a bit of the beginning. And I actually played softball in college, so I have a bit of a sports background, and got a full scholarship, played ball in college, and learned for the first time in my life after 18 years of playing ball what it looked like to watch the game from the bench. So I was on the team, but I was not starting the team. And that was a great life lesson. So I learned, you know, of course I had learned in high school the value of those that show up, go up. You know, if you don't practice, you don't play. And, you know, you practice sick, you practice when you don't feel good, you practice when the weather isn't good, you know. Those are, I really attribute a lot of business sense to a sports background. I went on to coach gymnastics and I tore my ACL in college, and that changed a whole direction of life there. And anyway, so that's a little bit. And then I got involved in Mary Kay cosmetic business because I needed a car. Someone told me they gave away free cars. I was like, well, I need a car. Let's figure this out. So then I went, and 5 months later, I had a free car. And that kind of set up the next 10 or 20 years of my life of really quickly moving into more management in that position as a director. And I had women all over the nation I worked with in sales teams I developed, and was fortunate and blessed to really earn 14 free cars, including 4 pink Cadillacs. So I, you know, learned a lot about that. I retired from that, and I always had my hand in other things. My husband's a general contractor and a builder, so together we have worked in the construction industry now for about 15 or 20 years. And, you know, there's a lot of acquisition, government deals, and all kinds of other business related avenues that I've gone down with him, and investments, and creating, you know, smaller, bigger deals to sell and turn profit. Our very first little investment was this HUD home. We were married like 1 year. And that was back when that was a great option. And so we got this little HUD house. It was like $4,000 down, and you could buy this house. And of course he was in the business. So we did all the work to fix it up. And, we got a renter in there immediately who paid us rent and did the option to buy. We sold it in a year and made like $30,000-$40,000 and thought we were rich. I mean, we had been married a year and a half. And anyway, it's looking back at some of those little wins when you're just grinding to make things happen, but you quickly, you know, reinvest and are looking for the next place to serve and use your skill. And yeah, we've done plenty of things that didn't make that kind of money. And those are some of the better lessons in life, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. As an entrepreneur, yeah, we all have those stories.
So, you know, taking us back to, you know, because you kind of went from little red wagon to pink Cadillacs, right? As your vehicle for your sales team.
Yeah.
But you're recruiting your one-year-old sister. How did you get her involved? Like, you know, we talk about leadership and, you know, building teams and such like that. How'd you get her involved? And did you give her a cut of the profits? Like, if she's listening right now, is she going to be upset that you cut her out of these profits? Like, what happened there?
Heavens no. Oh my God, cut her out of the profits. No, she didn't have a clue. She was along for the ride. Yeah. And so, you know, as a leader, sometimes you strategically surround yourself with people who, you know, can serve you well, but you do it in a way that allows them to enjoy part of the blessing of the journey. And I mean that sincerely. It's funny you're bringing this up. I never thought of that. No one has ever asked me if my one-year-old sister is upset to this day. She doesn't, I guarantee you, she doesn't even remember it. But what I will tell you is that, see, even at that time in my life, what I learned was quickly, I sold her. Yeah. On the fact that if you come on, if this is fun, come with Sissy and you sit there and smile, and then I'll play with you later. I'll take you to the park. You do, you know. And so I learned quickly how to lead and help. Well, there's a saying, you know, help enough other people get what they want, and you'll always get what you want. And I totally believe that, and I have found that to be true over and over and over in my life, no matter what business, no matter whether it's a 1-year-old or a 60-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. That I love that that quote. I think it was Zig Ziglar who said that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. What a legacy that guy led. All right. So
that's right.
In your journey, man, you have really done a lot of incredible things. Selling strawberries. You got into into sports, which kind of helped you kind of with the mindset of, you know, those who show up. What did you say? Those who show up.
Go up.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
And then you, what was your first, after high school or college, what was your first like entrepreneurial journey? Was it the one where you said, hey, I need a car. How could I get a car? Or were there other things involved?
No, that was after college. That's when you actually get the degree and don't have the job. Okay. So during college, I didn't have time to get a real job. So of course, here I was in college. I think I was about 19, my second year in college. And you know, I always had a flair for arts and crafty type things. So I started designing clothing wear. It was a Mommy and Me line. And this Mommy and Me line, the company was actually called Cheers, C-H-E-E-R-S. I was just a positive Cheers. I wanted this to be a way to bring cheer to other people that you could wear art. So it was wearable art. It was back in the, oh gosh, late 80s. They're 80, whatever. Yeah, 88, 89, I guess. And it was kind of popular. Some people, you may not even remember Tosh Wilson, but nonetheless, some of our listeners may. It was kind of popular at the time, but I would be in the garage from 9 p.m. to midnight. I would get up at 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then go to classes all day, you know? And then I was coaching a couple days a week after classes in the afternoon. So I would mainly do it in the garage at those hours because that's when it was the coolest, right? And I would paint and make, and oh my gosh, it was to think back what I did was crazy. And then during the fall, I would travel all over the state of Florida and enter every art show I could every weekend because it was only like a 3-month it was really September, October, November, December. Okay, 4 months at art shows. I'd find one every weekend to go to, set up my little tent and sell, you know, $500, $1,500 a weekend. And again, think I was rich as a college student. So I didn't understand scalability. I had no mentors, no coaches. It was not an LLC. It was not, you know, it was not set up with a separate banking account, but I was having fun and I was making enough money to suit my needs.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, you know, fast forward, you were past president and now sit on the board for NABO. What is NABO?
The National Association of Women Business Owners. So thanks for asking about that. We're right in the local chapter. Well, there are only 3 chapters in the state of Florida. And so the Orlando chapter is by far the biggest currently, and really a great, great national organization that has a local presence. So NABO is the collective voice of over 10,000 women business owners across the nation, and their mission is to propel women in business to spheres of influence internationally. We do advocacy work, we do mentorship, and we exist solely to promote, support, and in fact, you know, elevate, help women business owners scale.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So 10,000, the collective voice of 10,000 women.
Women business owners. WBOs. I mean, but only qualification is you must be 51% WBO. Wow. So yeah, it is exciting. And actually, I'm headed out in 2 days to Spokane, Washington to the national conference. I'll be speaking there on a panel with the SBA and UPS on access, accessing capital for WBOs. So it's pretty exciting. We've worked with a, you know, there's grant, there's private money, there's, you know, loans, investors, crowdfunding, GoFundMe. I mean, there's so much access to capital right now. And of course, it's what every tier one, tier two business needs, right? So, you know, off the record, that's, it's been really exciting to be part of that panel and truly help business owners realize the resources that they have available. I mean, that I have never realized more how much I love being an advocate for small business owners. So I'm really excited about that and maybe happy to share a couple of tips on that if interested. But nonetheless, yeah, so that's a bit about NABO, and you can find out more at naboorlando.org.
Very cool. So with that, from the collective voice of 10,000 women-owned businesses, what advice could you give my daughter? She's 5 years old. She's an entrepreneur now, so she sold her first book online. And she is, I think she's going to be an entrepreneur. She's telling me what to do every day, so she's pretty good at it. So if you have one piece of advice for a future Orlando entrepreneur, being a female owner and building that, what piece of advice would you give my 5-year-old daughter?
Wow, a 5-year-old daughter. I would say, first of all, I would high five her and say, "You go, girl." And then I would tell her to be aggressive. Be aggressive and be bold. You know, use your courage to realize that no often means next. Do not take the no's personal. No means next, next, next. Who's next? What's next? Next call, next person, next opportunity. I mean, just kind of next. Nothing personal. Next. No means next.
That yeah. Doesn't apply for when my wife tells me no, does it?
This is not a conversation
not
about that.
Not that kind of show, huh?
That is not my area. I will at least be honest enough to share that.
Yeah. All right. So roughly pivoting into, you're actually an author, and I'm looking at your website. You're an author of a book, and it's Naked to Knockout. I can't read the sub.
Beauty from the Inside Out.
Oh, man, that's good. Tell us about what your book is about.
Okay, good. So hence the name, with a bit of my branding and marketing acumen and background. We needed to find something that would be a little catchy and memorable. And OMG was developing that website ever a memorable line with that kind of a title, Naked to Knock Out. You can imagine the kind of hits and things that will show up, and clients have sent me all kinds of screenshots. I'm trying to find you, but clearly you're not in WE, whatever it is. What's the wrestling? You know, anyway. Nonetheless, so the book is about when I entered the beauty arena for selling cosmetics and working with women. You know, I quickly found that a woman's image is just so much bigger than I had ever realized. And I think that moving around so much as a young girl, I just didn't have time to fall into worrying that much. You know, bullying wasn't a big deal to me back in the 70s. You know, I think there was a word called respect that people did a little bit better than they do today. Anyway, just my opinion. But, you know, and so as I got older and I realized, oh my gosh, there's this confidence issue that women are really, really lacking in. And so while I can help them feel and look great on the outside, it isn't changing the fact that on the inside, they are struggling big time. And then, you know, deviating here a bit on a personal agenda, my husband and I were married about 10 years before we had children, and that wasn't by choice. That was a very difficult journey and a very, very hard, anyway, it was a very difficult time in my life as a woman that wanted children and had miscarriages and surgeries and failed adoptions. I mean, I had it all in 10 years. And so it was very, very challenging going through that time and waiting and discerning and, you know, looking at how my image and myself was tied to where I was in life, what I had, what I could control, what I couldn't. And, you know, I just knew that there was so much more substance to talk about than just surfacey type things. And so anyway, all of that to say, that is really what the book is about. I took at that point, I think this was about 7 years ago, I took what I had learned. I mean, let me fast forward. Thank the Lord. I'm completely blessed. I have two daughters that I bore, carried in my tummy, and they came out and healthy and wonderful, and thank you, God. And, you know, I was just a bit of an older mom than I planned to be. So anyway, sidebar there. But with the two girls that I'm actually raising, even elevated that to a higher level, that I started realizing as I raised them that, oh my gosh, I want them to be healthy and happy in their own skin. You know, I don't want them to have to be so this digital age and the, oh my God, you know, these selfie issues and all this crap that growing young girls, tweens, and teens are bombarded with today. And men too, for that fact. I mean, again, we don't need to get into all that, but clearly America is suffering from an image issue. And all of these little snippets, I feel like I'm brushing over such a very deep subject in need that needs to be discussed. But nonetheless, that's what the book is about on that level. And it includes a few chapters on how to present well, how to use confidence to create more open door opportunities, and the power of your first impression. You know, while image shouldn't matter, the fact is it does. And so when you can use that and leverage that from a business standpoint to your benefit and letting it help you create more open door opportunities, use that leverage to be the best you can at networking events, to stand out and be, you know, your voice, your communication effort, style, your, you know, how many times do people say, leave me a message and I'll call you back? And the truth is they simply do not. I mean, this is change your message, you know, change your message. Don't agree to call people back if you're so busy or things fall through the crack, or that you may not, you know, it's not an important priority to you to call people back in a timely manner. But I think those are important. That's all part of the reputation and image that precedes you as a business owner and as an entrepreneur. These are little things that, man, they add up to make a big impact.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is what a great experience. Kind of building, you know, building people and investing in people and really, really focusing on, you know, it sounds like you've invested your world into, you know, helping women. And this is really incredible. What are you up to now? I see, you know, president, founder, of a software company. You know, talk to us a little bit about what that is.
Well, I thought you were going to say, oh, and you're not even an engineer. So why are you involved in the movement to advance women in tech? Well, I'm so glad you asked, Josh.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do get asked that question a lot. Now, you've never been in tech. What in the world are you doing in that field now? Well, the answer is really simple. And I'm not an engineer, but what I am is someone that has utilize so many of these different genres and truly been an event maestro. I've connected people my whole life. So You know, when I was able to, will be asked to partner and team up and head out and develop a whole new division of Bold Technologies, which is our parent company, I knew that, you know, I was at least interested. And so we've been working on this product for about the last year. The product's been in the market for about 4 years now. And so I've come in to develop a whole new division, a whole new company called Community Event Apps. And so what we do there at CEA is we've created this really, truly robust app that is specifically mobile friendly for organizations that host events. So it is in fact an event app. So it helps connect the community, whether it's a seasonal event, a 3-day conference, or whether it's an ongoing organization that has needs to promote their events year round, you know, whether it's networking events, educational events, maybe they have one or two signature events a year. So, you know, we've got over 80,000 downloads. So it's been very successful. In its infancy, the app was created because a client came to us and asked. And then what I've been able to do is work with our developers and build a team, a sales team, as well as a marketing team that, you know, we now have a number of different verticals that we're working with. And so it's so exciting for me to, you know, kind of lead that effort and not need to know everything of that the engineers know. I let them do their thing and they let me do mine. So we're a great fit and we're really excited about how this is going to continue to serve the tech industry.
Excellent. So you called yourself an event maestro because you over the years working in Mary Kay and all the organizations, and even back in the day when you were you know, doing the clothing business and going to these fairs, like, you were constantly putting together events. So you've been on many different sides of the event coin. So what problem does the event app that you guys created, the software, what problem does it solve in the event space that you think that you know, that you guys are uniquely positioned to fix for people?
Great. Exactly. A lot of things really, but on the surface, it primarily solves the problem that every organization putting on an event has, and that is the end user experience. So the attendee at the event, at the festival, I mean, really all you want to know is, when is my daughter dancing on the stage? When is XYZ music group going to be? Is it 7 or is it 8? And is it in the city that's putting on the seafood festival? You know, when are they doing the live crab, whatever? You know, is the music festival having multiple people on the live stage? And when are the shows? Where are they? When are they? Who's performing? How do I find that out? Where do I park? We're integrating parking systems. The Uber app will be part of that. Finding, you know, from venues to speakers to endless push notifications to ticketing and pricing, registering, handling the event. So the ease of check-in and registration. Hello, anyone that's ever been part of an event knows that is probably the number one nightmare. And then the biggest and most exciting, really, for me, because I understand the value that nonprofits and, I mean, every organization has, and that's, how can we showcase our sponsors? How can we give our sponsors and our trustees the ROI they want and they need and expect? So we have that capability as well. As well as, again, just the dashboard. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I'm so proud of what our developers have done to create the dashboard in its newest, most updated form, literally just became available in September here. It pretty much mirrors, I guess, Squarespace, if a lot of people are familiar with that kind of a dashboard, on a very simple right on your phone. So literally from your phone, you can work the dashboard, update an event. If there was a, you know, mixer event that was supposed to happen on the rooftop and or some outdoor location that got rained out and got moved, you can organizer can update it right from their phone, and the instant updates are all there. So if there's any changes, location changes, whatever you need to communicate to attendees and anybody attending any event, whether it's 10 people or 10,000 people at a city event, you can do that in an instant. So, you know, this pretty much handles all of your printing and handing out papers and menus and, oh my gosh, you know, websites, having to go. I know that, you know, there's so many places on websites. This is all we've heard now for 5 years is people can't get the information they need to make the user experience more streamlined.
Yeah. And I mean, you said something and kind of like brushed over it, but like, this is incredible. You guys are a new group. You built it based on a customer asked for it. So you guys built it and then you're like, well, this is actually pretty valuable. And then we could serve more people in it. So it was already validated. And then you've had 80,000 downloads.
Bingo.
80,000? How in the world did you do that? Like people, like there's a ton of app people out there, software companies going, how in the world did you get 80,000 people to try your app?
Well, it's primary. So the first vertical was fringe festivals. So festivals have big attendees, and they are all over the world. You know, I'm working with a couple of international festivals now that are getting ready to use it, and so. You know, it's really easy when you partner and align yourself and, you know, be really strategic with where the masses already are. You know, go where the masses are. Go, just what you said, obviously solve a problem, right? Find a need and fill it. That is basic to any business. Find a need and fill it and then make it better. Find a need and fill it and then make it better. So you're right. That's the brilliance. There's no secret, but that is the brilliance of any successful business is find the need, fill it, and keep scaling and making it better.
Yeah. Wow. That's really awesome. Go where the masses are. You know, like what a great piece of advice for that. You're dropping a lot of golden nuggets of wisdom here. Definitely could tell that you've been in the entrepreneurial world and in the sales world. Now you're helping build the sales organization, and you do a lot of work actually in corporations as a speaker and as a sales coach, right? Talk to us a little bit about a female salesperson, right? Like, talk to us a little bit about what that looks like, because is there a different approach? I don't know. I'm a guy. Like, is there a different approach? Is there challenges? Is there advantages? Like, you know, let us into the world of a sales coach and behind the scenes.
Well, I think that, again, it's not unlike any other business, really, that you need to find a niche. You know, if you can, the smaller the niche that you can find that you speak to, whether it's a service or a product. I remember I used to always say, you know, a lot of people in Mary Kay would say, anyone that has skin is a potential client. Well, no. This is not how you build a successful. Everyone that has skin is not a good client for me. So I would have to, you know, even back then in the day, the right client for me was a working woman, because I knew that a working woman, now remember, just don't shoot me for this, but back in the day in the 80s and 90s, I knew that a working woman generally didn't have to ask her husband's permission to spend money. And so I wanted sales now. And I didn't want to, you know, have to have someone love and want everything and then have to ask her husband if she can have some money to buy it. I needed to sell it today. So I would find that if a working woman was creating cash flow for her family, she was a little more apt to, you know, make purchases, not based, you know, thank God we're beyond that in the year 2000s. But anyway, you know, women pretty much buy and spend as they want today. But, you know, a lot's changed. And I've seen that firsthand in sales. So a lot of people are coaches. And if you're a general Joe Blow coach, I think the sooner you can figure out who your client is not, the better you'll be able to serve who your client is. And I wish someone would have told me that 20 years ago. So that would be a good, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have known about resources available, how I could align myself with organizations and serve people in certain industries and volunteer, be strategic. You don't give to get, but you always get when you give. So where can you align yourself with the right industry that is already serving the audience you want to get in front of? Again, this is no rocket science, but it's a good reminder, right, for all of us. I mean, what am I doing banging my head up against the wall over here? And instead of keep trying to figure out how to make this happen, why don't you just shift and look over here and think, you know, maybe it's not the, you know, it's just not to be so stringent on. You don't want to cut off this certain industry of people that I am not going to serve them. But it's to say, I want to go after this. And then if they come along, well, great. But the more specific you can focus on a niche, the better you'll be. And that's across the board for anything.
Yeah, this is really good. So here's what I heard. And I'm going to repeat it to make sure that I could sound smart. Go where the masses are. The smaller the niche, the better. Find out who is not your ideal client. And then I heard someone say a different way, but it's this. It's pitch to the rich. Like pitch to someone who could actually make the decision to buy, right? And mm-hmm. when you do that in sales, like you're just increasing your odds of success and decreasing your odds of failure. Wow, that is... Yeah. You're good. This is good stuff right here. You should You should do keynote speeches. You know that?
Imagine that. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. So, well, and you know, I do want to say one thing. The pitch to the rich. Actually, I haven't heard that. And so, I do think sometimes when you're younger, and I don't mean younger by age, I really mean younger, quote, in the business arena. You know, I mean, I do feel like there's a lot of learning that needs to happen before you're able to pitch to the rich, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know who the rich is until you know who they're not. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You can't get to decision makers. Yes, the goal is to get to decision makers. You can ask who the decision makers are, but, you know, getting past the gatekeeper, well, yes. I mean, those are always the goals and always the things that a lot of people have hangups on. How do I even find out who that person is? And the truth is, today, thanks to LinkedIn and Google, I mean, we really can find out, you know, actual names and get a hold of emails. But I would just encourage the younger in business, you are be willing to put the time in to develop relationships, because in developing the relationships, all you have to do is ask somebody to introduce you to the decision maker. But don't expect that's what you're going to get when you're, you know, a year doing what you're doing, don't have a whole lot of credibility. I'm not going to introduce you to, you know, when you don't have an executive summary, you have minimal sales, you don't even know who your client base is, you just want to know who the VP of Darden is. And I happen to be able to have that happen for you. But no, we've got some other work we need to do before we can make that happen. And so be willing. That's just my encouragement. Be willing to put the time in, get your feet on the ground, make the calls, get some no's, learn, pitch better, get your bullet points and, you know, massage them, be open to change, surround yourself with advisors and mentors and be a good listener.
Yeah, that's good. So you say surround yourself, you know, with advisors and mentors, and this topic comes up a lot in, you know, on the show. What's a piece of advice you have for finding someone who's an advisor or working with an advisor?
Well, truly, volunteer. You volunteer first, but do it in an industry with an organization that you really, you know, whose people you want to really get involved with. So volunteering aligns yourself with that element of being able to give back. And, you know, I can truly say that's exactly what NABO did for me. I sat on the board for a year and did anything they asked me to do. I became the program chair. Then I put on all the programs. I was the one there early. I was the one that stayed late. I moved chairs. I went and picked up food. I carried all kinds of crap you can't even imagine. Doing stuff to make the programs work well and look good for the speaker and the other organization. And the truth is, at that point, I had no goal or desire because I really didn't have time to be the president. I was just doing it because it needed to be done. So you're willing to truly serve, but I loved the organization and knew that it served the women I ultimately wanted as clients. And these are the women who knew the other women I needed to know. And it had a national reach. So I, that's what worked for me. But, women tend to sometimes be overprepared and underconfident. And so to that point, you asked me specifically a few minutes ago about women in sales or approaching and how was that different. I would say that is the major differentiator, is that women are overprepared, underconfident. And so be confident, be aggressive, be bold. And, get your sisterhood of support, get your little posse. You need to find your place of women that will have your back and cheer you on and don't care about self-serving, but care about being a true servant leader. And when you find, you know, we call that, core common values, and a corporate culture of surrounding yourself with people with very different interests. I mean, I love, you know, we didn't talk about diversity, but being open enough to collaborate in a diverse way with a lot of different people and a lot of different thinkers, belief systems, skill sets, but the thing you must have in common is those core values. So you've got to be able to talk about hard things, hard scenarios. And when you can align with the core values, the fact that you do it differently and you get to the end result by different means is a really good and valuable thing.
Yeah.
So I wish more of that was happening. But I think we kind of silo ourselves with what feels comfortable, you know, but you're not ever going to grow if you're comfortable. And if I'm only around the people I already know and are comfortable with, I already know who they know for the most part. You know, I mean, so you've got to get out of your comfort zone. You've got to constantly, and it's not leaping out of your comfort zone. It's take one step. What am I doing this week to take one step out of my comfort zone? What am I doing next month to get one step out of my comfort zone? And boy, I tell you, if you start asking yourself that as an entrepreneur every day, you will be growing. And I haven't met anyone that isn't growing individually that isn't also growing corporately.
Hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. So you are working on some amazing things. You're building a community apps program and a software as a service, and you're helping a lot of people, nonprofits and community managers and event managers. You're helping them really focus on their end user, the people inside there and the questions that they have. So I think that's really incredible. If people want to know more about you, about the company, about the things that you're working on, how could people find you?
Well, thank you. So probably at this point, just go to Wendy Lynn Phillips on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I think that's a great way and a platform from a business standpoint that we can learn a bit more about each other. And the website is communityeventapps.com. Communityeventapps.com. Follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. And we've got some new videos that we just created coming out here this week, and some really unique. I'd love for the Orlando community to know more about it, be able to share some of those videos, and anything I can do to help and answer questions, and be a part of future conversation, collaboration. There's so much happening in Orlando right now. It's sometimes I call it the double-edged sword, right? There's so much happening that there's so much. And yet at the same time, you can't be at all things and try to be all things to all people. So right now that's my top priority. And then serving and working, speaking to organizations that are the right fit, that I can really help scale. So I don't know that startups are my, focus right now, but I know a lot of people that are doing a lot of great things in the Orlando area, and those organizations that are supporting them, I'd be happy to connect. I know you know them as well. And so I really appreciate what you and David and others are doing to support all Orlando entrepreneurs. So kudos to you too, Josh.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm having a blast doing it. Entrepreneurs are definitely my people. Let me ask you a question. Why Orlando? Like why did you and your husband, like why are you guys here? What do you love about Orlando for you and your family and your business?
Well, the truth is, my office is in Winter Park. I am the NABO office is at the National Entrepreneur Center right in downtown Orlando. I love the spirit of collaboration that we've experienced. When NABO is housed at the NEC, we work with 14 other organizations, SCORE, the SBA, SBDC, the Hispanic Chamber, the African American Chamber, and but personally, I happen to live in Mount Dora. So we raise our girls here. They go to Mount Dora Christian Academy here. And, I love driving home and coming over my little hill and seeing the lake. And it is a teeny piece of heaven. People used to think I maybe live more out in the country, but the truth is the 429 and the 414 have quickly changed that. And we are such a connector, speaking of connections again, the Mount Dora, Orlando, Lake Mary, and then of course, the corridor directly between Tampa and Lakeland right now. I mean, I run all up and down that golden triangle constantly from Tampa to Mount Dora to, Orlando in the Disney area. It's just such a melting pot of diversity and business and people and culture. I love the variety. I mean, I really, really do. It's just a unique and special place. And, that works for me.
That's good. That's good. Well, Wendy, this has been a fun conversation. I've took a few pages of notes on sales and just confidence.
There's another book we can write, right? Yeah. There's another book we're going to write.
Well, it's great because you wrote a book about, you know, confidence and such for women. But man, I was taking a bunch of notes because, you know, the same thing applies to me. And I'm definitely blessed to have had a conversation with you and what you're doing. I just want to say thank you for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom, advice, and your experience with us.
Yes, you're so welcome.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen in the audience here at Orlando Entrepreneurs, thanks for listening in. If you want to connect with Wendy, you could go to the show notes and you could click on the links there and you could connect directly to her on LinkedIn and the other places that she shared. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day and I hope that this inspired you and gave you some education, some advice, and that you guys could go out and build some incredible things here in wonderful Orlando. So everyone in Orlando, thank you for listening in, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. All right. Bye, everyone. Bye, Wendy.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You could also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.